Damn it, Nick.
I love being on here with you guys, Nick and Joe. I really appreciate it.
Literally too long didn't read.
TLDR, you guys are awesome.
Nicholas, I am in a Top Golf golf league, if you can believe that.
Oh, wow. I can very much so, yes.
And after 2 weeks, you were looking at the number one ranked team.
Whoa.
Out of 30 teams.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
30 teams. Wow. That's impressive. Jeez.
So I'm going to tell you something. So we went last week, and last week was more like practice and everything, just to kind of get everyone familiar with, you know, Top Golf, who maybe hasn't done Top Golf before, and how the leagues work, all that stuff. So I started off last week hot, and then I just, man, it did not go. The night did not end well. So I was able to get there a little early last night. Now it's wild because we, for as little money as we've paid, we get this thing for like 4 hours. So I was the first one there. So I got to practice. I probably ripped off 50, 60 balls, and I couldn't fucking hit shit.
Ooh.
It was like I had the yips.
Oh no. Oh yeah.
But now I'll tell you something, right? That red light went on. It was game time, buddy. I was ripping it. Absolutely ripping it. And I stay all of that. Oh, what are you going to say?
I was going to say, I tell you, man, like sometimes it's actually, I found that it's better to have a bad warm up than have a good warm up, because then you get all that bad shit out of your system. You know what's off, and then you're good going into game time. And that's proof right there.
And you know what it was? It was my stance of all things. It was the way I was addressing the ball. I made a quick little tweak. I say all of that, Nicholas, because I am fired up, because we've got a hell of a show tonight. And I'm going to tell you, Doc's on fire. I am fucking feeling it. And with that said, watch me screw up the intro. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, listeners of all ages, the Dork Shared Gooniverse, Geeks Worldwide Radio. Hear that? Worldwide Radio proudly presents to you the greatest, and I mean the greatest, suck it, P.T. Barnum. We are the greatest podcasting team in the world. He's the Fry Guy, Nick Fryer. I'm your friendly neighborhood backcracker, Dr. Joe, and together we are the TLDR Comic Book Club, baby. How's it going?
Perfection. Yeah. I just want to know why P.T. Barnum caught a stray tonight. Didn't have that on my bingo card. And also, I'm really appreciative that you still consider you and I the greatest podcasting team in the world after what happened this weekend with Royal Rumble, because you won, but I unfortunately didn't carry my weight, and but your other podcast partner did.
Okay, so to answer the first question, the greatest show. We are the greatest show. This is the greatest show.
Sure. Yep.
A wonderful musical, by the way.
Yes, it is.
Hugh Jackman, just a tremendous song and dance, man. Two, if rumors are to be true, if the dirt sheets are to be believed in, Nicholas, I got gypped. I should have won both.
Oh.
CM Punk got hurt and they had to call an audible. Ooh. I had CM Punk, baby. That should have been the winner. But with that said, the Pineapple Boys did reign victorious. Now, I want to say this, too, and I have to go back and look at the archives, because I won the female Royal Rumble a few years ago when I got Ronda Rousey. Right? And I'm pretty sure Billy won. I think Billy might have won that year, too.
Really?
Yeah, I'd have to go back and take a look at the archives.
That's wild.
But I think the Pineapple Boys reigned victorious. Like, this is kind of weird. But anyways.
You know what, though? I think you're for those who are watching us on Doc's Twitch stream or on Twitter or maybe on our YouTube page, you can find us in all those places, depending on where you're finding us now. But if you look on Doc's screen right now, it says, I didn't rig shit. But if we're seeing stuff repeat itself like that so, like, perfectly, I don't know, man. You sure about that?
I didn't bring shit.
but yes, if you're fine. Well, go ahead. Sorry.
What I was going to say is what it did was it allowed me to send final payment. You know, I was on a layaway program with Nicholas for our trip to Chicago.
Yes. Yeah, we can tell people now. Yeah, but everything's been finalized. We are going to be at C2E2 this year. I know they're starting to finally announce some of the guests and everything, but the biggest ones they have yet to announce, and that's you and I. But we're very excited for some of the names that we're seeing. Of course, the biggest one right now is a friend of the show, Chip Zdarsky, a.k.a. My Chip, but not of Chip. Course, your Chip. I apologize.
Yeah. Yes. Damn right you apologize. Don't fuck that up again.
Well, do I say you're – is it like he's known as My Chip by you? Like, yeah. That's a mouthful, though.
You would say Doc's Chip.
Doc's Chip. Okay, got it. Okay, good to know. Yeah. All right, we'll see how he feels about that, because I don't know – I don't know if you
– As I get escorted out of C2E2 for stalking.
I don't know if he if the last time he was on, you referred to him as My Chip yet. So
I'm not sure. I can't remember. But what I really want to know, what the people want to know, Nicholas, is where are we going for pizza?
Oh, it's Lou Malnati's. It's not even a question.
Yeah, I'm just gonna smother that all over my body.
Okay.
And then I will be throating some Italian beefs as well. Take that how you wish, you know, how you want.
Yep.
Definitely hot dogs. You know, I'm gonna have a hot dog, but like the hot dog for me is like third on the Chicago food list.
Yeah, I don't even know if I put it that high on mine, but I definitely Portillo's. We'll be hitting up Portillo's for sure. That, Lou Malnati's. Anybody who says Giordano's is better, stop listening to the show.
Now, I got no beef with Giordano's. We will not slander Giordano's. I've never had Lou Malnati's, so I can't make the claim that Giordano's is the GOAT. Giordano's is the only Chicago deep dish pizza I've had while I was in Chicago, because I was only there briefly. I didn't get a ton of chance to stay in the city. So a former patient of mine had said, go to Giordano's.
Okay. So it's fine. Like I don't hate it, but like when you talk about the difference between the two, I don't want to hear only Lou Malnati's is the better one. It's lose.
And you want to hear it's a fucking wild. So my Tic Tac algorithm is accessible as you can imagine, but there's a lot of food on there. And I get a lot of, one bite review, you know, Tic Tacs on there, but I also get a lot of Chicago deep dish stuff. And whenever Giordano's it's Giordano's of Orlando. What the fuck?
What the hell? Like,
why of Orlando? I don't give two poops about deep dish in Orlando. It's Chicago. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like we have Uno's like everywhere across the country. Right? It's like, not really.
Anyways,
the same thing. But I brought up, you know, Chip, and we've had him on the show. For those who are new to the show, maybe just catching us on Twitter or maybe on Doc's Twitch stream or whatever. We've had him on twice, if I'm not mistaken.
Three times, so, no?
No, two times. One for New Bern and then one around the Devil's Reign time. I don't think those were at the same exact time. But either way, it's only been twice. You can double check me by all means. But if you're wondering, how come I can't find those anywhere on your YouTube page or on Doc's Twitch stream? That's because the only place you can find those conversations are on our audio channel. So that's Apple, Spotify, Geeks Worldwide Radio, SoundCloud. Every time I want to say Stitcher, but Stitcher no longer exists. But Pocket Cast is out there. Amazon, I think maybe Audible. Either way, any major podcasting platform you can find us. And if you're finding us on a stream right now and you're wondering, hey, I don't see you guys on the audio channel I use, by all means, let us know. You can slide into our DMs and we'll happily move our stuff over there. But we are on all the major ones. That's the only place you can find any of our Friar side chats. And those are with creators across the industry, artists, writers, editors, you name it. I think the only thing we haven't done yet is a letterer, which I'm sure at some point down the line we will mix one or two in. But when you go to our audio channel too, please leave a 5-star rating interview. If you can leave a higher rating than 5, leave the highest one that you can. Otherwise, you're going to learn the real meaning of Backcracker and you will ruin Joe's weekend and inadvertently also probably ruin mine as well, because I'll be feeling bad for Joe the whole time. But enough of that, Joe. It's time for us to talk about the books that we've been catching up on since we last convened before we get to what's new. What have you been catching up on?
I didn't catch up on much. It was a pretty busy weekend. We had the Rumble. I had a birthday party to go to. Football, all that good stuff. But I caught up on the final issue of Dracula by James Tynan and Martin Simmons. Man, so this is a title that, you know, if we do another horror-themed episode again this year, which we probably do in October, maybe this is somewhere on the list. This was really good.
Oh, you mean if we do a top 10? Or are you talking about a...
Well, if we expand it, right? We talked about expanding it, right? Mm-hmm. This was a really good book. Like, Tynan has great command, you know, like Dracula, it's a Dracula book, but he's more of a background character. This is a lot of Van Helsing. This is a lot of Renfield. It was just really fucking good, like plain and simple. I'll talk about this book at some point. And then I started reading Cobra Commander by Joshua Williamson, and boy, does that book start off hot.
Yeah, because I think it's teased at the end of Duke, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
That looks, I'm reading Duke and I'm reading Transformers, but I'm gonna you take Cobra Commander.
Okay, you're missing out. Okay. That book started off a lot. It's not your kid's Cobra Commander. Right off the rip, this book is starts off with some nice violence. Love it.
I think it's good for us to at least have one of those talked about on the show if it has that potential, because we're both doing Duke, we're both reading Transformers, so let's mix that one in, because that's one I probably would have passed on anyways.
Scott Snyder had some very high praise for this book.
Yeah. Yes, you are absolutely right. So for me, I've been catching up. I caught up on The Resurrection of Magneto, which is good. There's at least going to be another issue of that. Strong stuff there. That's from Al Ewing. And then I have finished all of Jed McKay's run. Week to week. So this would be technically the fifth volume, which is not out yet. Of course, 26 through 33 through 30, excuse me, the single issues are all out. But I've caught up on all of that so I can get in on The Vengeance of the Moon Knight, which Jed McKay is also writing. I think I'm not sure what I want to do. Like, if I want to talk about all his Moon Knight stuff, or I want to see how Spirit of the Vengeance of the Moon Knight transpires. But I'm going to talk about one of them, so I may just wait a little bit, see how that goes, and then touch base after that arc ends. Because if it's great, then I'll do it, and if not, then I will just do his Moon Knight run. But I have to imagine it's going to be awesome, because he's done an outstanding job. Now, before we get into this loaded week of books that are coming out, because wow, there's a ton of good stuff coming out this week, I did have a question for you. So I was also at a birthday celebration this weekend. So I was in Connecticut as a result, went to a bookshop, and I saw the first volume of I Hate Fairyland. You have not read this. You did have dibs on it because it's Scott Young. And I like Scott Young a lot too. But
I don't know if I called dibs, but I said I might have said it's a book I'm interested in.
So okay.
By all means, if you beat me to it, then you beat me to it.
Okay. So I'm going to, okay, because I've been waiting on that. I'm going to check it out in the first volume. I know there was like, I don't know what volumes were he's been doing recently, but the title has come back. So I'm going to check out that first volume, and I'll circle back and let you know if it's something that's going to be TLDR worthy. I would imagine it's going to be, as much as we haven't talked a ton of Scotty Young on here, but I love his art style. And obviously, he's a good writer too. But anyways, you good to get into what's new?
Yeah. Now, you said this was a loaded week. I would say Image has a loaded week.
Okay. I mean, it's a loaded week. It's period. I mean, I'm just looking at all it's a loaded week, but yes, Image is definitely what sets above.
There's a lot of stuff out there, but I would say Image by far is carrying the load.
That's true. There's no question about that.
So, like, as usual, Marvel has 1,000 books out this week. So we have The Incredible Hulk issue 8, Avengers Twilight issue 2, Dr. Aphra, issue 40. That's a Star Wars book. We have Spider-Boy issue 3, Spine-Tingling Spider-Man issue 4, Dead X-Men issue 1, which is another one I meant to read. I just didn't get a chance to.
Yep. Steve Fox, definitely going to be checking that out.
Yep. Avengers Inc. issue 5, Carnage issue 3, Miguel O'Hara Spider-Man 2099 issue 5, Deadly Hands of Kung Fu Gang War issue 2, Marvel Superhero Secret Wars Battle World issue 3, and then Marvel Voices Legends issue 1, and then the one book from Marvel I really, really wanted to get a chance to read. I ran out of time today. Wolverine issue 42, the Jackie Robinson issue of 42, if you will.
Yes. So we got Benjamin Percy, Victor LaValle as the writers, Corey Smith is the penciler, Oren Jr. is the inker, and then Alex Sinclair is the colorist. Second issue of the Sabretooth War. Again, this has not only like where it's like the most violent or whatever Wolverine story you've ever seen, but it also has a warning on the cover of the book that says, and I quote, parental advisory not for kids. Okay. You know, now you remember we talked about this last time?
Yeah. Yeah. It was fucking advisory. Wild.
Yes. And this thing was the second issue of the Sabretooth War after things got absolutely crazy in the first issue, especially the ending of that thing. It all continues insane violence, especially for a Marvel book, insane torture that Wolverine undergoes too. And that's not spoiler. Like that's, it is crazy what happens to him throughout this story. And then the action there's quite a few characters who there are already characters who were kind of teased, like X-Force characters, who we saw a little bit of in the first issue of the Sabretooth War. We see some more of them in different ones incorporated in various fashions. I love what Percy and LaVallee did with the Sabretooth and with Wolverine and these other X-Force characters throughout this issue. Like first issue, 10 out of 10. Second issue, 10 out of 10. Like this, you have to be reading the Sabretooth War stuff if you like Wolverine at all. Outstanding stuff, Joe.
Yeah, I'm reading that tonight. I'm so pissed I didn't read this before the show.
Yeah,
because you know that last issue, right? Part one, I mean, was so crackers, right? So,
this is right now. I mean, there's some really, really good books out this week. This was number one on my list, like number one in terms of like I had to read it first, and then it ended up like living up to the hype of like this is the best book of the week. It's outstanding. From Image, we got World Tree issue 7, which we are now both reading.
I highlighted the wrong color.
You're good. But I'm letting the people know that I've like, again, a book I had serious FOMO about, and I'm so glad I'm able to read this.
Are you caught up?
I actually didn't read this issue. I'm caught up otherwise. Okay.
That's fine. At least you're caught up to this issue. That's fine.
King Spawn issue 30, Duke issue 2, Dark Ride issue 10, Edenwood issue 4, Quest issue 5, Siphon issue 3, The Dead Lucky issue 11, and then we got three books that we want to touch on, but I'm going to let you pick first.
Yeah, Edenwood's another one that I have to go back and read. That's the Tony Daniel book, which absolutely love.
So visual, it's visually is absolutely stunning, man. I mean, as you would expect, but it's so cool.
Yeah, and we just have not been getting like Skybound review copies. I would have loved to have read Duke 2, but I'm going to kick us off, Nicholas, with Local Man issue 9, because how do I say this? This book is just so fucking good, right? And this issue in particular, like this second arc has been like. The first arc was great, but I think the second arc for me has been better. And that's saying something because the first arc was just absolutely tremendous. But what we get in this issue, this was, I think, the best issue of the series so far. The interactions you have with Crossjack and just how like everything he touches turns to shit, but everything really comes to the forefront in this particular issue. And then the way it ends, I don't know if you had a chance to read it yet, Nicholas, but
yes, I did.
The ending to this issue was, it was so good. Cause it wasn't like, oh, like something like bombastic, something that like we didn't like, you know, like just came out of nowhere. Like it was just like a perfect cliffhanger way to end this particular issue where like, yes, you didn't see it coming in that regards. Like, you know, Seeley and Fleeks did a really good job at like giving you a really good solid end to this, but it was like, it didn't need to be like, you know, someone just like absolutely like just pulling something out of nowhere and giving you this jaw dropping ending. It fits the story so well. I saw that and I went, fuck, I want issue 10 now. Like, it was like, I remember like going to see, like, I think I've used this analogy before, like, the second Matrix movie, I remember in the middle of the theater, right, when it ended, going, are you fucking kidding me? That's how you're going to end this? And now I've got to wait like an entire year for the third movie to come out, right? That's sort of how I felt at the end of this issue. I was like, are you kidding me? You're going to give me that? And then, guys, if you're listening, right, please, you could send me that digital copy ahead of time. It doesn't need to be colored. I just need to know what happens. Yes. That's how good this issue was, man. It was just I got a little excited there at the end, but like that's just how much I love this series. This is a book that when it's all said and done, you're gonna buy it. You're gonna have the omnibus or whatever, you know, the complete edition, you know, on your bookshelf. This is just such a good series. I can't praise it enough.
Yeah, for real. I mean, in my thing too, when you talk about the ending, this is they something happens in this issue that sets up for the ending, and it's done so perfectly, like just naturally in the course of everything, and it's been building up for that to possibly take on the life that it does in Local Man issue 9, the one that's out this month. And then the ending, I agree, like it's a great ending. Like it is an outstanding ending.
Yeah.
It is. It's a perfect ending. But it's like, you're right. It's a jaw dropper because it's like, oh fuck. But at the same time, it's like, this has been there. Like you always knew this could happen. So it's not like an out of left field thing. But to me, like this just that the way this issue was done, like the important, the major like tentpole moments of this issue are just a great example of just how strong their writing is on this series. These guys have been doing an outstanding job, and they laid the foundation for this issue. And now like it's been great so far, but this issue is like, could be where like shit just goes absolutely like bananas from here compared to everything else we've had in these 9 issues so far. It's outstanding. Very well done.
It was perfectly executed is what it was.
Yep. 100%. That's the best way to put it in a short sentence, in a few words. Where do you want to go next?
Let's go Killadelphia, and then you can discuss the number one.
Okay, cool. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So Killadelphia, we finally get the full issue of Savage Dragon. What'd you think?
So I'm not very familiar with this character, but I tell you what, I'm going to go back and I'm going to familiarize myself with Savage Dragon, because he's one of the OGs, right? Mm-hmm. in the Image world, along with Spawn. So, you know, we get some more of your boy who you love in this book.
Toussaint, yep.
Yep. And this was a really good issue. This was like just that perfect issue. It's like, okay, we're setting things up here now. Like, this wasn't like a high octane, like fast paced, you know, kind of issue, but like that, with that introduction of Savage Dragon and just sort of where things are going now. Like this was such a great issue to kind of set up what's coming next. And Alexander's and Herman Irmasieb's art, again, fucking fantastic. Right. Yeah. It's vicious even when vicious things aren't even happening. Right.
Yeah.
That's what I love about it.
There are some pretty vicious things that happen.
There are, no doubt.
Maybe for a Killadelphia issue, it's not like not an all-time vicious thing. But like my thing coming out of this was like, these guys have like zero fucking chill. Like the two of them,
zero.
And Jason Sean Alexander is like, Jesus Christ. Like they just go absolutely batshit with some of these images. And then the other thing too was what Rodney's doing with this character Harold, who we're getting some narration and everything in the first few pages. And I'm like, okay, what's this? And then we get then more and more throughout the issue. While elsewhere, we're seeing Seesaw doing his thing with Savage Dragon and Toussaint and whatnot. But this other story that's like developing in the background is like, what is this?
I'm going to predict it now. Not that Rodney hasn't done anything, you know, he continues to knock our socks off.
Right.
But I've got a feeling that there's a reveal coming here. This was really going to knock our socks off.
Yeah.
Just because, like I said, that's what this issue did. It sets it up. It sets things up. And he's setting something up for this reveal here that I think is just going to, it's going to have you and I just speechless.
Yeah. It feels pretty freaking terrifying too. So I'm very excited for whatever it is that those three guys have in store for us. But yes, you did allude to a first issue that is out this week from Image. We got Moon Man issue 1, which is written by Kyle Higgins and Scott Muscutti, who is better known as Kid Cudi. So this is his debut. Obviously, we see quite a few celebrities in various forms, you know, dip their toe into the comic space. We also have Marco Licati as the artist, and then Igor Monti doing the colors. And I am going to call dibs on this one. And this was one that I saw, okay, Kyle Higgins is writing it, so I'm going to check this out because Kyle obviously does a great job. And then let's see what Kid Cudi's bringing to the table. And I'll tell you what, I'm calling dibs because this thing really impressed me. I did not know what to expect from just going into this because who knows with Kyle co-writing it with somebody. Main character is a guy named Roman who's an astronaut that doesn't work for NASA, seems to kind of work for maybe an Amazon type where he goes off into space. Some shit happens, and that's where this story starts. He's back from whatever shit has happened, and it seems like there were some complications. A lot went on, but also it was kind of all really quick. So, and then back home now, there's a lot of tension around this company that this guy worked for, and it seems to be some expectation for him to get involved in some capacity, at least. It's on one side so far. I'm not sure about the other side necessarily. We'll see. But then, even in the first page, you find out something is going on with Ramon. We don't know exactly what it is. We get a pretty darn good idea as the story goes along, and may force him to have to get involved in this whole mess a little bit more so. But we don't know. We still don't know exactly what it is that's going on, and that's going to be the big thing as we go forward in this. But yeah, it was great first issue. And the biggest thing, too, you see it right in the first page. And I don't know if you've seen the preview pages for this, Joe, but Igor Monti's color is really just trippy as friggin' hell. And it seems very appropriate for an astronaut-type story, which I feel like we've seen a few astronaut stories pop up in the past couple of years. Not at Image. So I've liked a few of them. I haven't been able to talk about them on the show, but this was a great start to the series. So Moon Man issue one. Definitely want to check that out.
Love that. Love that. Awesome.
All right. Nothing from, oh no, we got, of course, Duke is from Skybound. And then we got from AWA, we got Ribbon Queen, issue 7. What do we got from Boom?
Okay, so from Boom, we have Coda, issue 5, Sirens of the City, issue 6. We have Power Rangers Unlimited, the Morphin Masters. And I just said, you know what? Fuck it. Nick, I'm calling dibs.
Yeah.
Just to give you a hard time.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, go ahead. Jump right in the middle of the story and please do an episode on a one-shot. Go for it.
Oh, well, I can do it. We talked about this. I most certainly could do an episode on a one-shot, but just to prevent you from reading something, you know, that's what made me giggle on the inside of my head as I sent that text.
I'll tell you what, killer issue. This is Ryan Parrott writing Ranger Slayer. I don't think I need to say anymore. If you've been listening to the show for any length of time, you know how I feel about that.
Yeah. We have House of Slaughter, number 1, Pen and Ink. So this is sort of like a director's cut, where it's black and white. You get some, commentary, from the artists and the writers and things like that. And then Orcs, The Gift, issue 2. Mm. Let me rip through some of these other ones, so then we can kind of... we could talk about Dark Horse real quick before we jump into things here. From IDW... we have Star Trek Picard's Academy, issue 5. From Ablaze, we have The Agent, issue 2. I have the first issue. I know you read the first one. I still haven't read it yet, but I do want to read it before I get my hands on the second issue. From Dynamite, we have Lilo and Stitch, issue 1. Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, issue 1. Fatal Exams. What a fucking title this is. Jesus. Jeez. Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, Fatal Exams, issue 5. What the fuck? Tighten it up. Tighten it up. And then we have Pathfinder, Wake of the Dead, issue 5 from Mad Cave Studios. Now, we have Charred Remains, issue 2, Project Reese, issue 2, and then The Devil That Wears My Face, issue 4, which will take me to Dark Horse because we have Drive Like Hell, issue 4, the finale, and I linked those two together because, man, what a fucking week is Alex Cormack having.
Damn right? Straight, man.
Fucking week. We get the announcement that the newest volume of Sync will be launching on Kickstarter, I believe, on Valentine's Day.
I think so, yeah.
Which is apropos. But Drive Like Hell and you've been raving about The Devil That Wears My Face. Those are all... good. Three books that are drawn by Alex Cormack. And, like we said many, many times before, he has a very particular style. that fits stories like these so brilliantly. And I don't know how you felt about Drive Like Hell, but I love the team of Richard Duick and Alex Cormack. And I thought this was such a satisfying ending to this series, because I didn't know where it was going to go. I didn't know how they were going to end it. And it was so satisfying with the decision that they went in.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I'm really like, this is a team that you introduced me to. And obviously we've seen Alex do other things off. Like, we've seen him pair up with John Lees multiple times, as you've alluded to already. I mean, just when you're talking about horror artists, he's absolutely one of the best. And of course, a Floppy Award winner from last year. But yeah, like the ending, there's so much going. It's funny, like, they land the plane so well, but at the same time, there's so much shit going on, but it all fits perfectly for the story. Like, the tempo has been breakneck fucking calamity the whole time. And it was, I mean, I couldn't ask for more from the ending. I was really happy with it. I agree with you. Very satisfying.
I mean, it was all so very fitting, because the title of the book is Drive Like Hell. And the pacing on this from the first panel has just been like, we're popping the restrictor plate, baby. We're going. And so, like,
yes,
this book really did move, you know, at 100 miles per hour. And the ending, man, was chaotic in the most fitting way possible. And
yeah,
just the last two issues alone, you know, were really effing good. So, like, if you haven't been reading this series, do it. Don't hesitate. Like,
yep.
I can't recommend Duick and Cormack's, you know, work enough. Read all their books, whether it's Sea of Sorrows, Road of Bones. I always screw the name of this one up. Breath of Sounds, and now Drive Like Hell. They're all very distinct, very, very good books that if you're a horror fan, you're going to love.
Yeah, this awesome. Like, it was a really fun series. Definitely something if you decided, like, oh, I might trade weight on this, go get it when that trade comes out. Don't think twice about it. I mean, in this ending too, like, I just wanted to say, when it comes to, like, artistically, obviously this has been an outstanding series for both Duick and Cormack, but, like, the art, like, in this, like, you know, you talk about how these last two issues, just those alone, in this issue, I felt like Rich and Alex, like, stepped up, like, their game even more than they already had. And the imagery that we get from it is grand and calamitous. If you don't know how that's fucking possible, like, you read this book and you will understand exactly what I'm talking about when you get to the final chapter of it. But yeah, Drive Like Hell is over. It would absolutely be a TLDR worthy book. Maybe we'll do a one shot someday, although we've talked about this book every month, extensively. So definitely go check that out at some point if you haven't already. Then, Joe, we have from Distillery, Somna issue 2. This is Becky Cloonan and Tula Lotte. I have dibs on this one. I am very excited to check this out. We do not get review copies of this, so we can't dig into it right now. But the first issue, definitely on a TLDR worthy trend, and quite risque, I must say.
Yeah, on the naughty list.
Yes. And then from DC, we're ending things there for what's new this week. We got Batman, Superman, World's Finest Annual 2024, Batman, Robin Annual, Titans, Beast World Issue 6, Alan Scott, The Green Lantern Issue 4, Batman, Offworld Issue 3, Trinity Special Issue 1, Power Girl Uncovered Issue 1, and DC Power 2024 Issue 1, which then brings us, Joe, to the book you want to discuss this week.
Yeah, so it was funny because I had a completely different book in mind. There's a Brubaker Phillips book that came out a month or so ago. The whole graphic novel, OGN. the title is eluding me at the moment, but I was planning on doing that. But then, as I'm thinking about it, I'm like, well, we've done a lot of Brubaker Phillips lately. Let me just go peruse my bookshelf, because I've got, you know, a huge collection of graphic novels, most of which I have read, but there are some that I have purchased and just haven't gotten to yet. And so I'm looking at it, and I had it down between the book that I'm about to discuss, as well as Planet Hulk, which is supposed to be a very, very good series, which I'm looking forward to reading one day and hopefully talking about on the show. But the book that I chose was Green Arrow Year One. I can't remember when I bought this. It's definitely a couple of years ago. because this has been out for a while, I believe, 2007. And then with the series started, and then the graphic, you know, the first trade came out in 2008 or something like that, 2009. But this was written by Andy Diggle, with art by Jock.
What a team.
Right? With colors by David Barron and letters by Jared K. Fletcher. So how did socialite Oliver Queen become the brave hero known as Green Arrow? Find out in this trade paperback volume collecting the 6-issue origin miniseries. The creative team behind the critically acclaimed Vertigo series, The Losers, reunites and explores Ollie's time on an island where he's forced to fight for his life against dangerous drug dealers and find his true calling. So Green Arrow, part of the reason why I bought this book and why I chose to read it is I'm not a huge, like, I sort of, you know, obviously between the bow and arrow comparisons, but characters like Green Arrow, like Hawkeye, you know, some of these sort of B level, you know, characters, like I know of them. I've never really sat down and be like, oh, I'm going to read a Green Arrow series. I'm going to go, you know, pick up a Hawkeye series. And yet I read the Hawkeye. It was written by Matt Hawkins. It was fantastic. And a lot of that had to do, you know, on the show that we both liked.
A lot, but I understand, right? you're more of a Gimli guy. I get it.
Right. And, in both looks and fandom. thank you for derailing me there. But like I watched the show, right? I watched the CW show Arrow. I got through the first couple seasons, then it lost me. I guess it ended pretty okay. They got into the Kingdom Come storyline at some point. But anyways, like, okay, like it was a good show, especially for being on the CW. But the character was like, okay, it's an interesting character. And so like reading this, like this is a great book. This is a great example of like, okay, here's a character you may be familiar with that. Yeah. You know, kind of like what their origin story is about. It's like, it's nothing wildly complicated. He's not a superhero, so to speak, right? He doesn't have superpowers or anything like that. He's just a really kind of cool character. And this series is a great entryway into the character, and really gives you sort of great understanding of who he is, how he came to be, right? As any good origin story would do. And I found this book to be thoroughly enjoyable, like hands down. My nephew's never read Green Arrow. I don't think he's heard of Green Arrow, but he probably doesn't give two poops of Green Arrow. I give him this book. I bet he'd enjoy it very much. Right. Anyone that's sort of getting into comics that maybe their passion is the big two, whether it's Marvel or DC. I know that like we really get into the weeds with the independent books. And we do that because we love the stories and the creators and everything about that. So we actually don't do a ton of Marvel in DC. But like someone who's getting into comics, maybe for the first time, a younger reader, this is like, these are the types of books that I think are great entryways into giving them something different that I think they'd enjoy. Like there's 1,000 Spider-Man books. There's 1,000 Batman books, Superman, X-Men, you name it, right? And we all love those characters, but if like I feel like doing something like this, starting to introduce someone like a newer comic book reader into some of these second tier characters, with these really cool stories, is almost like a great gateway into like, okay, let's start exploring some more independent stuff now.
Yeah, right? I agree very much.
Right. So I thought this was an excellent origin story of Green Arrow. You know, what Diggle does here is I think he, when writing his version of this character in the origin story, he sort of takes like the worst parts of Tony Stark, like the human being, not the hero. And he takes all the playboy aspects from Bruce Wayne and perfectly sort of combines them into this character, right? The first issue, you know, Oliver Queen he's a fucking putz, right? And you're kind of actively rooting against him. Like he's that kind of slick back hair, you know, slopping his steaks,
Oh boy. You
know, right.
Lives for New Year's Eve.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely lives for New Year's Eve. Right. And so the way the book starts is he's just a complete asshole, right? Just, you know, just this, you know, rich playboy, you know, just minus the philanthropy part, right? You know, because he only cares about himself. But he's at an auction, and there's a bow that was used in the movie Robin Hood, you know, by the actor Errol Flynn, the OG Robin Hood, not the Disney Fox. Although that is one of my preferred versions of Robin Hood.
That's my hashtag my Robin Hood. 100%.
That's your Robin Hood? Not Kevin Costner?
Oh, yeah. No. It's the Fox. 100%.
So the bidding for this bow starts at $1,000, and this dickhead just shoots right to $100,000. And so, like, from there, like, you're introduced to him. You're introduced to his sort of bodyguard, Hackett. His driver, bodyguard, you know, sort of like, I wouldn't call him his Alfred, because we fucking love Alfred, and this guy Hackett, you he's another real fucking piece of shit. And so from there, you know, they end up, you know, Hackett has this thing he needs to do, and he needs to like step away for a little bit, but you know, Oliver was like, no, let's make us a trip together. We'll get on my yacht. We'll do this thing. And they're out at sea, and Oliver wasn't supposed to be there because this guy Hackett has stolen a shit ton of his money and was making a deal with someone, and has to, you know, now dispose of Oliver Queen. Talk about being at the wrong place at the wrong time. And so, you know, classic, you know, the thing that this guy should do is kill Oliver Queen, but he has a little bit of sympathy. So he just like knocks him out and throws him overboard, assuming he's going to drown. And this is where the origin really begins, where he washes up ashore on this sort of mysterious island. And when he gets there, there's sort of these charred remains of a village he finds a well because he needs water. But in that well is nothing but dead bodies. So he spends the next several months really learning how to survive, right? He fashions himself a bow and arrow so he can hunt. And then he stumbles upon something much, much bigger. And this is where the story then really sort of takes off. And we see that switch from just selfish prick, you know, character into you know, the Green Arrow that we are all familiar with, and the reasons why he's fighting are noble, and it's very selfless, and it's really badass to sort of see now this chess game between him and what turns out to be an island that is it's owned by you know, a Chinese drug lord who uses it to grow poppies to sell or to make heroin, which they then distribute, you know, to the world. And so, you know, all the, you know, it becomes Oliver's mission to then save, you know, the people on the island that have to, you know, they've been enslaved to this work. And so, like, what's really great about it is, like, Diggle's writing is just the way he ties everything together. He pulls it, you know, pulls it all around. It's a tight 6 issues. It reads really fast. It's a great origin story. Jock's art. I mean, if you're not familiar with Jock, you should be, because his art is just like, it's really clean. He knows how to do great action scenes. He sucks you right in, you know, to the storytelling. Like, his art is, you know, next level, you know, sort of stuff. And then, like, you go from really, really hating this guy to then, you know, obviously you're really, really rooting for him. And I love that Green Arrow is not a superhero. He wasn't given this origin story where he's got, like, he was always blessed with tremendous vision or anything like that. He's like, this is a guy who was forced to survive, you know, on his own, and the shit that he learns about himself, and the way that his character changes from the issue 1 to issue 6 is what you want in a story. So, like I said, like, this is a book like you can give to someone who's like, oh yeah, I've heard of Green Arrow. Oh, well, read this. I think you'll really, you know, you really like the character from there. And it's great because now, like, I'm more interested in wanting to read more, you know, Green Arrow, you know, books, and, you know, seeing what creative teams are behind them and all that. So just, you know, this is, like I said, this is a great entry book for new comic book readers that will hopefully spawn them to go want to explore other secondary type characters. And like I said, we don't talk a lot of Marvel and DC books on here. And so this is a great opportunity to sort of explore a character that we necessarily probably wouldn't talk about on this show, but deserves it. And so I just recommend this to any DC fan out there, any green, you know, fringe Green Arrow fan, or someone that's completely new to comics and or the character. This was just this was a great little book.
Yeah. So oddly enough, I mean, I do like Green Arrow quite a bit, and I've read, actually Benjamin Percy's done some Green Arrow in the past, and I did enjoy his work.
Check that out now.
Yeah, and I have not read this, but it's honestly a shame that I haven't. This sounds awesome, and like the thing too with Green Arrow, where like if you like Batman, you know, I know you could easily say like, oh, him and Green Arrow, like how different are they? Obviously, Batman is like the most prepared individual there is, but they. Like over the years, like people talk about how like Batman is almost more for like the wealthy in what he does. Green Arrow tries to be the opposite. I don't think Batman wants to be that. But that's just how some people perceive him. Green Arrow is not that. So it's an interesting character to check out if you like Batman, or if you think Batman isn't whatever he makes him out to be. There's something to check out there. And also on the note of Jock too, where we've seen him do some really cool Batman stuff, I actually like never. Like as you're talking about it, I'm like, oh yeah, you know what? This like in the setting too for where Green Arrow is, like I could see Jock absolutely crushing it on Green Arrow. So like visually, that sounds outstanding.
And you know what Jock does really well too is he does landscapes really well. He has this ability to again not just suck you in, but like give you this sort of, you know, grand feeling that you're in someplace much bigger. Right. I can't remember the name of the title, but the book he did with Scott Snyder over at Comixology. It wasn't Snyder. It was. Snow Angels with Lemire. Yeah. Right. Like he just had like the way he draws landscapes. Right. He just has this ability to like just make things feel epic.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And he does a great job on this too, where the story primarily takes place on this small island. There's some shots that he draws where you're like, whew, wow, you know, you kind of feel like you're there.
Yeah. That's some cool stuff. The other thing too, that I have to come clean on. So this weekend when I was with the in-laws, we watched Tommy Boy, of course, classic. And when you brought up the name Hackett, I couldn't help but think of Buddy. Whack it?
Was that Tommy Boy or was that Black
Tommy
Sheep?
Boy. It's Tommy Boy. Yeah. I promise it was. Just like, it's when Richard is at the pool and everything. Sinner.
Yeah.
Richard, who's your favorite little rascal? Is it Alfalfa or Spanky? Chris Farley, man. Amazing.
Yeah, that's right.
What a pair of those two. Yeah. Anyways, don't get any ideas when we go to Chicago. But all right.
Jesus.
So we're, like you said, we don't talk. We mix it up with the big two stuff, but we don't do a ton when you consider the catalog that those two companies have. But we are doing a Marvel DC episode, so I'm holding up the Marvel end of things here, and I'm talking about Dark X-Men, which is a very recent title that's coming out of the fall of Krakoa. So Dark X-Men is by Steve Fox, Jonas Scharf. Steve Fox is the writer, Jonas Scharf is the artist. Colors by Frank Martin, letters by Clayton Cowles. Five-issue series that ended in December. This was on my short list for best new series of 2023. Per League of Comic Geeks, the trade is set to come out in July. I think with everything going on with Krakoa, all things X-Men, it's kind of hard to expect them to do more with these characters beyond these five issues. There was definitely room to run it back if they wanted to. That doesn't mean there aren't stakes in this series, but it was like they have room to do more here. And quite frankly, I would love to see them do it. Steve Fox is somebody that I'm I'm fairly new to. I can't think of anything that he's written. I didn't look into it afterwards, but Jonas Scharf is someone who I am familiar with. We talked about Basilisk a while back on this show. I did an episode on that, and he was the artist on that series. And I'll talk about his approach with those two, these two titles a little bit later on. But the synopsis for Dark X-Men: the Goblin Queen assembles her own team of Dark X-Men. Hope the world survives the experience. Following the explosive events of the Hellfire Gala, Madeline Pryor realizes the world needs the X-Men now more than ever. Havoc and Gambit have served on the team before, but never one that looks like this. And how does young mutant Carmen Cruz, aka Gimmick, fall under the Goblin Queen's sway? Find out in the most horrific installment of the X-Men saga yet. And this is pretty violent. I don't think I'd put it on
Sabretooth Wolverine.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't put it on that level. But I would say from like what we've seen in recent years so far, obviously Sabretooth and Wolverine, like it's just even those first two issues, there's been nothing to that level. Then we get Ghost Rider, and everything with Ghost Rider has been on that, has been on a level. And I know Wolverine's right there, like all pre-Sabretooth War, it's had its moments for sure too. I would say after those three titles, like Dark X-Men for recent stuff is like in terms of like the violence of the action that we see. Because obviously like with X-Men stuff, we've seen some crazy, like the most recent Hellfire Gala is absolutely batshit. But in the things that happen are very serious. But at the same time, like the action, like we're talking about something different here and what we see in the art. Now, we mentioned some of the main players here already. We got Madeline Pryor, who is Jean Grey's clone. She's out to save mutantdom in a way that feels very similar to the old X-Men. But you could also say in some ways it's kind of like it does have like a Brotherhood of Mutants kind of feel as well. Not that she's out to attack the humans, but she's like, I'm all about saving the mutants. That is all I care about. They are under fire right now. Nobody is here taking care of these people and these individuals. We need to go and make sure they're getting taken care of. Havoc is right alongside her as her lover. Now, we all know him as one of the Summers brothers, but he takes on, you know, Madeline's lover in this series. And there's a lot that's going on with that character too. That gets a little spoilery if I say too much more when it comes to him. But I'm listing him second, but that's just because him and Madeline Pryor are an item. Then we get Gambit, who for my money, I would say is probably the number two player on like the good guy side in this series, but he's still not like a primary character. This feels very much like it is a team book. It very much feels like that. Pryor is at the center of things, but it's still like we bounce around to a lot of characters. But I'll get on more on Gambit in a second, but I also want to mention Azazel. To me, those are the four biggest characters without spoiling anything. And I'm even leaving some stuff out that comes at the end of the first issue just because I want to like leave that for the readers. I think that sets a really good tone to experience that the first time you read it. And I can talk about the series without getting into that. So there are other important players in here, but read the series to find out. You don't need to hear from me who they are. You'll find out as you go along. But what I love, like one of the big things for me when I read this is, okay, so this is like Dark X-Men. That sounds interesting. It sounds like these characters are very much operating outside the law, and they're possibly between, you know, the old X-Men and the Brotherhood. All right, I'm interested in that. And then you have Gambit in the mix. Anytime Gambit is in the mix, I'm going to check it out. It is a guarantee. You know, and there have been some recent stuff that maybe wasn't on the level that I wanted to be. And Gambit is a character who I can be quite snobby about. I try not to be with most characters, but honestly, I cannot help it because of how important he was for my comic book fandom. Steve Fox absolutely knows how to write Gambit, like 1,000%. Like I've said it before, when I've talked about it when the single issues were coming out, like he does an outstanding job with that character. And then we get Azazel too, who we know, and obviously he's been very relevant recently because he was always known as Nightcrawler's father. And this is a little bit of a spoiler. It's not addressed here, but it's a spoiler for other stuff by a friend of the show, Cy Spurrier, which we talked to him about maybe briefly. We didn't have a lot of time to talk Nightcrawler with him, but what time has made us realize that that Azazel is actually not Nightcrawler's father. His parents are actually Mystique and Destiny. That is a conversation for another day. But Azazel's a character that, like, when that happens,
you are not the father.
Yes. When that development happens, like, for me, it's like, okay, that's interesting. Separately, I'm reading Azazel in this series, and a character who don't know a ton outside of his, you know, what we thought his importance to Nightcrawler, and then what we've seen very briefly on the big screen. But character looks cool. He has the same power as Nightcrawler. He seems kind of evil. Okay, so then we get him here, and I'm like, I like this guy. He's a real piece of shit. I'm really glad he's not Nightcrawler's father anymore, because you know, he's that guy's dealt with enough over the years. But God, like, Azazel is awful, but I also love him for that. He's such an interesting character to have in the mix. And between him and then Madeline Pryor and some of these other players that we have here, like, look, I love Madeline Pryor. I'll get to her more in a second too. But like, Gambit's the voice of reason here. Like, that just, like, that shouldn't happen. But at the same time, like, it was perfectly done. I was blown away.
Two things, you know, you're fucked. One, if Gambit is your voice of reason, mm-hmm. and if you're the Boston Red Sox and you say someone like, I don't know, you know, Jeff Fry is a starter on your team, right? Mm-hmm. You know, yep. you're fucked. Right.
Yep. 100%. Yes, Jeff Fry. God, what a pull. But yeah, like, so again, like, at the same time, while he is the voice of reason for this team, it's the way it's done is perfect. And like, for me, that is a huge challenge from a writing standpoint. So like, Steve Fox is a guy who, like, we talked about it this week. He has it was Dead X-Men coming out. Like, I'm checking out that series, and I'm curious to see, like, if there's other stuff that he's done over the years that I just haven't been aware of, or I'm going to be checking out stuff, you know, moving forward from him. Because if you can go and do that with this character in a less than ideal spot from a writing standpoint to, like, write Gambit at his best, like, I'm very, very much impressed by that. So he absolutely won me over. I'm going to be checking out more Steve Fox stuff down the line. And I also love what he did with Madeline Pryor too. Like, this is a character who I'm sure many X-Men readers are familiar with, if not know very well. Someone who I should definitely know a little better than I do, but I am familiar with her game. We all know she's been a problem in varying capacities before, but that also made it really interesting, where it's like, okay, she's at the center of these things and she's trying to do good, and like, all right, well, what's going on here? And it, she's such a compelling character as the story goes along. And like, again, like, Steve Fox really sets a great tone with her from the jump, where she's like, I'm out to do good by the mutants, but like, I'm not out to do good, if that makes sense. Like, that, like, she's very, like, you can feel her passion for the persecution that the mutants are undergoing, again, to like the nth degree now, because of everything that's gone on. And I just love how he developed her as a character, to the point where, like, I'd love some more Madeline Pryor story. I'd love to see, you know, just those three characters alone, I'd love to see more of them interacting with one another. And I'd love to see Steve Fox writing it. And I'd love to see Jonah Scharf drawing it too. And again, like, Jonah Scharf, a name who I haven't talked about much on this show, and I don't think you have either, but obviously Basilisk is a series that I talked about on here at length, written by a friend of the show, Cullen Bunn, over at Boom. Really enjoyed that series, TLDR book. And that was that series was great visually, and he did a few different things there. And when I saw his art for this book, I didn't realize that, I actually didn't look at the names, because again, I was like, Gambit's in it, I'm checking it out. And then I looked after the fact, and when I saw that it was Jonah Scharf, I was like, oh, that's why this shit felt familiar. Because like there's like people talk about like Marvel house style, but then like the X-Men kind of have more of a style, like, that's like not the same across all books, but there's a very similar feel across X-Men books. And like, this had that, but at the same time, it's like, this is, I know this artist, like, there's something familiar about it, and I can't quite tell what it is. And then when I saw it was Jonah Scharf, I was like, that makes sense, but also wow, because I would not have pegged that he was going to go and do an X-Men book. Because while he has, like, there, you can, again, while I could tell, like, this is, like, I knew this guy from somewhere before. And then when I thought, okay, Basilisk, I see, like, that style in here still. He also modifies things in a way slightly too, where it like it feels like this is an X-Men book, like the this era of X-Men book. And I loved what he did and how he adjusted. And I love that I still felt like that same, the stuff that was in Basilisk that should translate to here, that's still his style. Like it's like he made adjustments, but he didn't compromise like what he is as an artist in the course of doing that. And that was awesome. And he had some great, outstanding action sequences, which I didn't mention before. And what and there's some other Jonas Scharf stuff out there. There's actually another title that he did at Boom with Cullen that neither of us have talked about that I intend to check out. If you do the work to find it and look at it first before me, fair game. But at the same time, I do intend to check it out. But I, in general, so like I'm all in on checking out more Steve Fox stuff. And when it comes to Scharf too, I do want to check more out, but I also like, I would love to see from him, I would love to see him get more opportunities because he can do horror, see him get opportunities where it's like an action story, but it incorporates a lot of horror elements within it because he does such a good job with action. And Basilisk kind of puts him in a similar spot there too. But I would like what he has here with the X-Men and what he did with this opportunity, I thought was outstanding. I'm sure he'll get more work from Marvel, if not DC, I'm sure would want to, but like, I would love to see him like some indie, get back into some more indie work too. But either way, like I'm going to be checking out Jonas Scharf stuff as the more I see his name pop up, but really had a lot of fun with Dark X-Men.
So while you were talking about Steve Fox, I was looking his catalog. And so he's done a lot of X-Men, various X-Men stuff. He has a short he did for TKO. They've got a bunch of these TKO shorts called Night Train. And Nicholas, I had to double check. There's a book that I have I called Dibs On that has, it's just in the pile of Dibs books that I have that I read, I loved, and I will bump it up to the top of the pile so you can read it. All Eight Eyes from Dark Horse Comics.
Oh, who's the Steve Fox or Scharf?
Steve Fox.
Oh, damn. That was him?
Yeah.
Oh,
with art by Peter Kowalski.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Oh, we've talked about Kowalski. Yep. I mean, I'm assuming it's Peter.
Witcher.
P-I-O. Yep.
No, wait. Is he Witcher or is he? No, he's He's the Kyle Starks book that I Where Monsters Lie.
Yes. That's it. Yep.
So
I will discuss that book on the show as soon as I can because it is a really good book, and we got just sidetracked, with holiday stuff and interviews and all that. Mm-hmm. So I will bump that up to the top of the pile so you can read it, Nicholas.
What a guy.
It was excellent. Excellent. So yeah, I was like Steve Fox, let me take a look. And So there we go. Marvel DC fucking big two, baby.
Yes. Now before we get going, I did want to circle back on two things just that we haven't touched on. Probably should have said it off the top. One, I had one of my nephews, it was his birthday this weekend, and he's big into Pokemon right now. So, I know Pokemon, so I'm able to get some stuff there. But I also was like, all right, I've gotten his brother Sonic comics, and he's enjoyed those. And this guy's a little bit younger.
Yes.
So I was like, I've been thinking about this book because you've talked about it quite a bit on here because your daughter likes it. And that's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Saturday Morning Adventures. So he hasn't read it yet. But I got him that, and he was excited to check that out. I mean, look, he was all caught up in the Pokemon stuff, but that recommendation, I felt so good because he loves animals too. So like, he's gonna have fun with this. TMNT. Yeah,
it's fun, and it's drawn in the style of the 80s, 90s cartoon, which is great. So that's awesome. That warms the cockles of my heart.
Yeah, I appreciate you talking about that on here because this is the kind of stuff where like I wouldn't. Like they like Dogman, and that's really all I mean, like other than that, it's like I'd be taking shots in the dark. And I'm not saying I couldn't, but it's just . So
awesome see stuff. if they've read any of the what's it called? Same author, Dave Pilkey, and characters from Dogman. It's the something comics club or something like that. I'll snap a picture of it and send it to you. It's another series of like, it's like the characters from the Dogman series that start their own comic book club.
Ooh, okay,
interesting. Yeah.
Okay, I'll send me that because the other nephew's coming, and his birthday's in a few months, I think. So, and he's the big dog man guy. So,
okay, cool. I'll send it to you. It's a good chance he already knows about it, but just in case, I'll send it to you.
Maybe not. I don't know. But the other thing I wanted to mention off the top of last week's show, so that was in issue 91, I mentioned that there was a Kickstarter that we had retweeted that you guys want to keep tabs on. It's still the launch is not happening for a little bit, but it's not too far away. But I do want to say at least one little tease when it comes to that. Part of the reason what we had mentioned when we retweeted it on Twitter from Thorny Comics, this is the Cloakroom presented by Scott Snyder. It's his class of writers that he does Zoom classes with, roughly once a month and everything. And we said that this is something that you're going to hear more about on our show for a reason that I forget exactly how I put it in the tweet, but you might not expect. I actually have a story that I wrote in this. I have an artist who I've been working with, who I've gotten to know for a while, who is also I met in the class. So we will talk about that on the show more as time goes along and be plugging it and whatnot. Joe knows knows about it. I've seen some of the art, but there's still stuff in the works, but yeah, I wanted to let people know, at least on here, about that.
Yeah, that's fucking awesome, Nicholas. Please just punch. Please Thank just punch you. When you had told me about that news. I'm very excited about this, and I'm sure everyone else will be pleased as well.
Thank
you. Your artist, she's absolutely fucking tremendous.
Yeah, you guys. She's her name's Nye, and you guys can find her on Instagram if you want to get a taste of what her art is like. Riddle__28. She does some awesome stuff. And actually, if you go and see the link that we retweeted, and I'm sure we'll be retweeting it more and whatnot. But if you look on the Kickstarter page for this series, you will see the main image. Our character is the leftmost image, so it's a biker queen character. So had some fun with that, and I'm looking forward to seeing that all finished up, and then everybody will get their hands on it. So yeah, very exciting experience so far.
Yeah, awesome.
All right, that is it. Until next week, Joe. Make sure everybody you subscribe to the show on your audio channels, because you never know what the fuck's gonna pop up. You never know what's moving on behind the scenes. Fuck, Joe and I don't even know what's going on half the time too. So subscribe. Leave a 5-star rating review. If you can leave a higher rating, leave the highest one that you can. Again, otherwise you're going to learn the real meaning of Backcracker. Joe,
not good.
Until next week, stay sexy.
You know it, baby.
Nick's just like, I'm out. All right, we're done.